October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month, and on Monday, a new report was released that found 43 people were killed in domestic violence instances in Wisconsin last year. This prompted us to schedule this show to ask why and how do we prevent or even end domestic violence. I'm Joy Cardine. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. It is coming up on 9 minutes past 6 o'clock on this Wednesday, September 30th. Have you suffered from domestic violence or domestic abuse? Do you know someone who has? What will it take to end domestic violence? 1-800-642-1234 or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Patty Seeger, Executive Director of End Domestic Abuse Wisconsin, formerly known as the Wisconsin Coalition Against Domestic Violence. Good morning.
Good morning, Joy.
Your group released this report on Monday. It found that 43 people died in 2014 in connection with domestic violence incidents. How do you define such an incident?
Well, our definition, we try to make it broad so we are able to tell the whole story of those whose lives are lost. So we not only include direct victims, somebody who's a spouse, a former spouse, somebody who is in a living together relationship or dating, have a child in common, or related by blood. But when somebody else, perhaps a companion or a child or a friend, are killed along with that victim, we include those people. Not that those folks are victims of domestic violence per se, but domestic violence is the root that caused them to be killed as well.
Yeah. When we're looking at domestic violence homicides, is it primarily the adults, or does domestic violence also include children?
Well, you know, there's far more children killed in Wisconsin and nationally as a result of child abuse. We include children in this report when they are killed, when there is evidence to support that they were killed as a part of a domestic violence dynamic, a dynamic where two adults in a relationship or former relationship, one is violently and coercively controlling the other. Children are sometimes killed as a message or as a way to hurt the intended victim. So we have kids whose parent or step-parent or the boyfriend or partner of the victim kill the child as a way to really do great emotional harm to the other parent. Or kids are killed when they're also trying to intervene. They're trying to stop perhaps a fight between their parents, and a child gets in the way, perhaps inadvertently gets shot with a gun or gets thrown against a wall. So kids are involved. This report includes a number of children who were killed during the course of domestic violence. The age range here in this report of folks who were involved in these domestic violence homicides ranges from 11 months to 80 years old.
Oh, how sad. The number is lower than the same report the year before when 55 people died in connection with domestic violence. Is that good news then?
I don't know that we can say on any given year that there's good or bad news. In 2011, the number was 37, and then in 2012 it was 52, 2013 55, in 2010 it was 58 folks. So we sort of see this up and down. What we know is somewhere on any given year between 30 and roughly 60 individuals in Wisconsin are killed as a result of domestic violence homicide.
Yeah. So why does this happen?
Well, you know, it's complex. This report really examines the factors, the lethality factors that are we are now starting to think about how we can assess when domestic violence may rise to the level of lethal violence. Ultimately, it's, you know, domestic violence on an individual level happens because one person feels an entitlement to control the other person in a relationship. And really, it's the ultimate form of control is to take their life. Threats to take the lives of the victim are, many victims report, are near constant. But the actual act of homicide is obviously more rare. In Wisconsin, domestic violence programs, the 71 primary service providers that are scattered across the state, serve about 40,000 women, children, and men annually, and about 25,000 folks per year report domestic violence to the police. So the overall numbers of individuals who are impacted by violence are far greater, obviously, than those who are actually killed. So we've been spending a fair amount of time trying to assess when a violent relationship may rise to the level of homicide. How would we know that? What are the factors that we need to know to establish that risk?
Well, you one of the statistics in the report is very, very troubling. It's that, wasn't it 57% of the homicides occur when the woman or the partner is leaving the abuser?
Yeah, you know, it's sort of contrary to sort of the public thought. So many times people look at, you know, if they know somebody's in a violent relationship, there's this constant question, why doesn't the victim simply leave? If it's that bad, why don't they just leave? And what we know is that victims know that perpetrator, the person who's abusing them, pretty much better than anybody. They know what they're capable of. And that we have to trust those victims' choices because leaving doesn't always equal safety. It is often the flashpoint at which the violence erupts and goes over the edge into the level of homicidal behavior. So, you know, we work really hard to gather police reports and read and come to understand each of these homicides. And what we know is, and there may be actually even more people who are considering leaving or in the act of leaving, but what we know from what we could garner from media reports, from police reports, is that in 57% of the time, victims were either had recently left or were trying to leave the relationship when the homicide occurred. And again, if you think about it, from that perspective of somebody needing to control another individual, that's the final act of control. You know, you can't leave me. You don't even get that choice.
Yeah. And Sheree in Waupun joins us now. Hi, Sheree.
Hi, thank you for taking my call. Just to give you a little background, I got married when I was 17. Dumbest thing I ever did, but you couldn't tell me that at the time. My ex-husband was extremely abusive. There were red flags that I was not skilled enough to see. And in retrospect, you know, that's something that I look at now and think, how could I not have seen that? But it's a really difficult situation. It's so easy to judge the victim and say, why don't they just leave? And what people don't understand is this person has been groomed for a while. So by the time they're ready to leave, they've been told that they're not good enough, that they're not going to find someone like them, who would ever want you, you're dumb. And it takes a lot of strength and a lot of support to leave. It's important. It's just important to not judge that person. It's such a nuanced argument. And, you know, you have to also look at the fact that people aren't shown how to be in proper relationships other than what they're modeled. So if someone comes from an abusive home, then chances are they're going to continue that cycle. The only model that we have is what's shown to us from our caregivers or our parents. So I think it's really important education is really important when it comes to this, because we need to talk about not controlling someone. We need to talk about giving people choice, and we need to discuss what a proper relationship looks like, not an abusive one.
Well, you've given us a lot to talk about, Sheree, after we check the news. I'm happy that you got out of that that relationship.
Thank you.
Sheree, thanks very much. We are talking with Patty Seeger, Executive Director of End Domestic Abuse Wisconsin, and we'll get her to respond to Sheree's story. And we'll talk about some of those red flags that that Sheree mentioned of a potentially abusive partner, and how we can help those who are trapped in abusive relationships. 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. This is the Ideas Network. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Joy Cardine. A recently released report finds that in 2014, 43 people were killed in domestic violence instances in Wisconsin. With Domestic Violence Awareness Month kicking off in October, we are talking with a guest about the problem of domestic violence in Wisconsin, how to spot it, how to help those who are trapped in an abusive relationship, and how to prevent it, even end it. Can we end domestic abuse? 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. Our guest is Patty Seeger, Executive Director of End Domestic Abuse Wisconsin. And Patty, we heard from Sheree just before the news, who said that she was trapped in an abusive relationship. She got married at 17 and did not know enough to spot the warning signs, the red flags. Let's talk about that first. What are there red flags?
Sure. First of all, I want to thank Sheree for coming on and having the courage to tell her story even a bit on the radio today. There are some warning flags, warning signs. Usually, violence doesn't happen right away in a relationship. If anything, victims of domestic violence often talk about the start of a relationship when they look back, as Sheree did, when they look back at the start of the relationship, often find that it's exactly the opposite of violent. It's a person who's super loving, super caring, almost seems like a total prince, a dream partner, somebody who says, I'll do everything to take care of you. Many victims talk about the fact that they're very whirlwindy relationships full of love and romance right off the bat. A lot of victims have talked about getting caught up very quickly in that, having the relationship move to a very serious level fairly quickly. Sheree was 17 when she got married. I don't know the dynamic, but a lot of victims share that, before they know it, they've moved in with that person. The person is saying to them that they don't need to work anymore, that they'll take care of them and they can just be at home. And, who wouldn't like that as a partner? And I often say to victims as I talk with them that if it seems like too good of a thing, it probably is too good of a thing. All of that is really a perfect setup to isolate somebody. You know, there are people, when people stop working, they lose a major a source of connection with other humans, people get very isolated from their friends and family as well during that time. Mm-hmm. Abusive people often use jealousy as a mechanism for creating that isolation. And then once the victim is fairly isolated, which can happen quickly or quite slowly, but when you're caught up in such a romantic relationship, sort of the last thing you're thinking about is that this person is going to hurt me at that point. Eventually, you find yourself mired in it. You're hooked in it. And then potentially violence starts happening. And often offenders, at least initially, are really sorry for what happened, often cry and say things immediately following a violent incident that, who would love me? Thank God I have you. A number of victims have communicated that they often, even though they were beat up, they often ended up feeling more sorry for the abuser. I think at least when we're talking about women, a lot of women are really enculturated to try to care for people. They have a really strong caring gene, and many women start to nurture the person. At the same time, the abuser starts saying, well, I did that, and I feel really sorry, but if you hadn't done X, then Y wouldn't have happened. So the blame starts getting subtly shifted until suddenly victims are hearing that they're dumb, that no one else would love them, that they can't do anything right. And all of this happens over time. It's not an immediate thing.
Yeah, and Sheree was saying that don't judge the victim of domestic abuse for not leaving, because it's easier said than done. Apparently, mm-hmm. she was hearing that you're worthless, you won't find anybody else, and it made it harder to leave.
Yes, it does. And if people have children together, think about that additional layer of complexity. If they are low income, or she has never worked, has never gotten an education, you know, it takes money to leave. It takes money to set up an apartment or a home of your own. A lot of times families may or may not be reliable for victims to run to. Families can also get fairly judgmental sometimes. They may be seeing the signs of abuse and saying something to the victim early on. And when the victim's still in that phase where they absolutely, completely love this person, they don't want to hear it. And so families may wash their hands, so to speak, of somebody who they believe is being victimized pretty early on. And in that way, they become, they cut themselves off from the victim, too. And many victims don't see their families as the resource that they need because of the judgment that Sheree talked about.
Yeah. And Sheree had some great ideas regarding prevention and the modeling of appropriate behavior by parents for children. But I want to bring in another call and talk about how a victim of domestic abuse can leave a relationship, I guess, successfully. Nancy in Sheldon joins us. Hi, Nancy.
Hi, Nancy.
Yes, I just wanted to share that I'm with a community action agency in northern Wisconsin, and we had a program that was funded through the U.S. Department of Justice Office on Violence Against Women that provided free legal services to victims of domestic violence in 15 counties in northern, northwestern, and north central Wisconsin. And we were funded for 5 years, and we helped over 900 women, two attorneys who were paid hardly anything, but felt so compelled to offer this service. But we just received notice on Monday, you know, with the fiscal year starting October 1st for the federal government, that our continuation funding was denied.
Oh, that's too bad.
I know. And so I've been up since, I'm the grant writer for our agency, and I've been up since 3 o'clock this morning looking for foundations now to fund this work, because my fear is that these women, and we partnered with domestic violence shelters in these 15 counties, and my fear is now women. And we helped primarily low-income women, because this area of the state is high poverty. We help these women become independent, help break the cycle of violence, getting their children out of those environments. And our program officer just, the response was there's just insufficient funding.
Yeah. Nancy, let me jump in, and I'm sorry that you've lost the funding, and I hope you can find something else. But how exactly did you help these women?
We had two attorneys.
But what did they do?
They helped these women with to get divorces, to get restraining orders. They provided just multiple services to these women. Divorce, separation, child custody placement, child support, unemployment compensation. They helped these women to escape their reality and to become independent. 900 women were assisted through this program while it was funded.
Yeah, well, Patty, a reaction to, I guess, the loss of funding for that program.
Well, first of all, Nancy, I hope you'll reach out to me at End Domestic Abuse Wisconsin. Look us up on the web and reach out to me. I can share some ideas with you as we found ourselves in the same exact place a number of years ago and have been able to successfully continue our legal services. So I hope that you'll reach out to me and I can talk with you about some of the things that we did to continue employing attorneys down here in southern Wisconsin to do the same work as you. So give me a call. You know, I will say that legal barriers are, particularly when victims have children with the offender, are one of the largest barriers that victims face. Nobody wants their kids to be placed in danger. Even when victims so courageously leave those situations, the abuser will use the children. As I said, in this report, there are a couple of small children who were killed. In this report, and abusers do sometimes kill the children or get custody of the children as a way to really hurt the other person in the relationship. Our system right now, while we have fairly strong law enforcement responses to domestic violence, when it comes to family law, the responses are very different. Abusers often have a lot more financial resources than the victim. Victims often can't afford legal representation. They go into those processes by themselves without legal representation. They often go into courts believing that the court will consider the violence that has happened. When somebody has legal representation, their representation also may do a very good job of convincing the court that the victim is making all of that up as a tactic or as a ploy to get custody of the children and get them away from the other parents. It's a really complex situation. Even when perpetrators have multiple convictions on their record for domestic violence, the courts have fairly uniformly believed that just because somebody is violent to their partner doesn't make them violent to their children. When statistically, actually, we know that about 70% of kids being raised in violent homes are also abuse victims themselves. Mm-hmm. So there's a very high correlation between as you could imagine, between a violent home and kids being abused as well. And we really need to take it more seriously. And it's a huge challenge. Having attorneys available for victims is absolutely critical. I will say in the last budget that passed in Wisconsin, there was $1 million allocation for legal services for victims of domestic and sexual violence that will be made available for some communities to apply for. It'll likely be handful of grants that will go out to communities based upon application, but that will provide direct legal representation for victims, and that's a start at the state level. The federal funds are never guaranteed. They're discretionary funds and never guaranteed to be a long-term solution to this problem.
Thank you, Nancy, for the call. Good luck. I'm glad that you can contact Patty after the show later today to get some ideas. I did want to ask Patty, what advice do you have for someone who might be listening right now who is in an abusive relationship and wants to leave but maybe is reluctant because of all the reasons we're talking about?
Sure. The first thing I really recommend is that you talk with somebody who understands what you're facing and can help you plan for a safe exit. And by that, I mean contacting one of the confidential domestic violence programs that are scattered across Wisconsin. We are very lucky to have a program, at least one program, in all 72 counties in Wisconsin and in all 11 tribes. So there are confidential services, the vast majority of which have 24-hour helplines, and that is a great source of entry just to start to share what's going on in your relationship and to problem solve and free think some ideas around a safe exit and what that takes.
Yeah.
There are about 50 shelters, emergency shelters in Wisconsin. If that's one option, there are a number of legal options, but it's the advocates who are working in these programs are the greatest source. For anybody who wants to know how to connect or find the closest program, going to our website, endabusewi.org, and clicking on the Get Help tab will get you the list of every program regionally and by county in the state along with information about the exact services and resources each of those programs provide. Those are confidential services, and by that I mean your information. You can make that call anonymously. You don't have to give your name, even if you share your name. These are confidential services. Your name and information will not be shared externally. The staff who work in those programs are highly skilled at helping victims problem solve and create safety strategies. Mm-hmm. But it really is the best way to ensure a safe departure.
And we have just a couple of minutes before news break, and then we'll talk a lot more, and including some prevention efforts after the news. But if we suspect a friend is in a situation, an abusive relationship, maybe we know a friend is in an abusive relationship, point them to your website, or is there anything more we can do?
Well, obviously, I think as a friend, I want to harken back to something that Sheree said, the first caller, which was that it's so important that we not judge. When we start judging that person's choices around that relationship, we cut off an important relationship, and it isolates that victim more. So the first thing I want to say to anybody who knows of somebody who's in an abusive relationship is to not judge their decisions about staying or leaving, any of it. But rather to communicate to your friend or family member that you're concerned for them, that you're seeing some things that feel concerning, that you hope that they're okay. You don't have to go right in and say, I believe this person is abusing you. You can say things in a subtle and caring way and say, you know, it feels like there's some tension in your relationship. Are you okay? You know, I'm always here for you if you want to talk or if you just want to take a break from the relationship and come and spend a few nights at my home.
Let me hold you there as we do have news, and we will continue after news. I'm Joy Cardine talking with Patty Seeger, Executive Director of End Domestic Abuse Wisconsin. the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We are talking about domestic abuse in Wisconsin with our guest, Patty Seeger, Executive Director of End Domestic Abuse Wisconsin, formerly known as the Coalition Against Domestic Violence, talking with her because October is Domestic Violence Awareness Month. And on Monday, Patty's group released a report that found 43 people died in 2014 in connection with domestic violence incidents. So we are talking about how we can prevent, how we can end domestic abuse, and welcoming your questions and your views at 1-800-642-1234, or send an email to talk@wpr.org. You can also post on the Joy Cardine Show Facebook page or tweet us at Joy Cardine Show. We've talked a lot about what domestic violence is and why it happens and the warning signs and what we can do to help. Let's talk a little bit more about prevention. When our caller Sheree called earlier in the hour, Patty, she thought that more needs to be done in terms of, I guess, modeling a proper relationship behavior, especially with children involved. Talk some about that. What is that important?
Oh, it's absolutely critical. Domestic violence or violence in relationships doesn't happen suddenly when people turn 18. Actually, we know that violent behavior typically begins between the ages of 12 and 18. And so while we know that more than 80% of parents from research don't believe that violence is an issue in the lives of their teens, one in three teens will be affected by dating violence. And that 1.5 million high school age teens experience some form of physical violence from a dating partner each year. Just an astounding number when we think about it. We don't typically think about teenagers as being exposed so early to violence. But it also should make sense to us that violence doesn't just begin at adulthood. So we really want to fulfill our commitment towards working towards an end to domestic abuse in Wisconsin. And part of that is in supporting future generations to hold new values that really embrace nonviolence and healthy relationships. We initiated about a year and a half ago a statewide teen program where we're working with teens across the state of Wisconsin, engaging them and helping them to mobilize within their own communities and their own schools around teen dating violence. While we know that one in three teens may experience violence, only one in 10 teens who are in a violent relationship will ever tell an adult. They are far more likely to tell another teen. So it becomes absolutely critical that we start to educate teens about what are the signs of an unhealthy relationship, how do you pursue, what are the values that support healthy relationships, and give teens resources so that they're able to recognize what's happening amongst their friends and their schools and be a place of support for other teens. Mm-hmm. I know ideally, parents would like to know if this were happening in their teen's life, but for any of us who remember what it was like when we were a teen and think about whether or not we told our parents everything that was going on in our life at that time, it becomes really clearly apparent that we really need to create a force for change by working with young people to have them be part of the solution. Yeah. And in fact, I believe that they will show us the way, ultimately, towards a nonviolent future.
So you started a program that does this. I mean, are there programs that can, how can people get involved with these programs that will teach the teens, how to spot these warning signs or healthy relationship skills?
Well, again, I want to point back. So we've initiated a statewide teen council with teens from across the state who come together with us quarterly to problem solve. But again, I want to point folks back to domestic abuse programs in their communities. That also is many of those programs have prevention education programs where they're going into schools. I really want to urge schools and any teachers or principals or school administrators who are listening to know and understand that teen violence is happening in schools and that schools can be part of the solution by welcoming advocacy groups coming in and helping them to educate students about what to look for. Almost every program in the state has staff who will come into schools, will meet with youth groups, faith-based youth groups to start educating youth at a very early age. We can even have conversations with small children about abusive relationships. Of course, the language and the way we would discuss it would be a lot more different than how I'm talking about it right now. We certainly don't want to scare small children, but we can start early educating kids about what healthy relationships look like, what feels safe and what doesn't feel safe. We can start changing our world when we work with kids.
Yeah, last year, last spring in 2014, Wisconsin passed three laws related to domestic violence prevention, requiring police that track incidents even when no arrests are made, creating a process for seizing a domestic abuser's guns. Do you think these changes helped reduce domestic violence fatalities?
Well, I don't think it's any one thing. I don't think that law enforcement or the criminal justice system is the one thing that we should rely totally upon. It is one tool in our toolbox. And I say that because we also know that there are many victims who, for a variety of reasons, don't see police as a resource. Police are part of a system. I think it takes whole communities being aware at multiple levels, so schools, healthcare, faith organizations, neighborhood centers and neighborhood associations, having conversations about violence in their communities, in their homes, in their communities. We do know that this does spill over to the streets. There is a direct connection between violence in the home and violence in the streets. We know that the vast majority of people in prisons today experience or witness violence in their home as children. So there is a continuum here that goes well beyond the law enforcement responses. We will continue to promote change in the legal system and in other systems that we believe can play a role, but we also recognize that it is a coordinated community response to violence that will really help shift.
Yeah. What other laws might be needed to help prevent domestic violence?
Well, I think we need stronger housing supports. I don't know if that's a law, but right now many housing is huge barrier for victims. It's the number one thing that victims need, and it's the number one thing that's not readily available for them. So when we often talk about why doesn't someone just leave, well, where will they go? Many of these victims are low income. Certainly not all victims are low income, but the people who don't have the immediate resources to get out and get to a safe place are those who are vulnerable for a variety of reasons, one being that they are low income and there are not adequate housing resources for them. So that's something that we really need. We need some kind of an economic safety net for victims to support them while they're in that transition. Violence doesn't just end immediately when a victim leaves an abusive relationship. That person will be subject potentially to long-term stalking and other disruptions in their life that may make it very difficult for them to immediately enter the workforce. So we need economic supports to help families transition from violent relationships to safe, healthy environments.
Pete on Facebook says, I wonder if the number of homicides will go up now that folks can purchase a gun with zero waiting. Are you concerned about that?
Well, for very obvious reasons, we oppose that. Firearms don't cause homicides. Batters with firearms cause homicides. We know that there's a really, really strong connection between ownership and access to a firearm and domestic violence homicide. And in fact, uniformly over our 15 years of researching domestic violence homicides, we have found that the firearms continues to be the number one cause of homicide. Use of a firearm is the number one tool used to kill another person. There's no surprise there. And we also know that domestic batterers own and possess firearms at a far greater rate than the general public. So we do have a number of laws that prohibit batterers from having firearms, but we needed that waiting period to do the adequate background checks to make sure that gun dealers are not selling firearms to domestic batterers. So it is a worry for us. We can't know until we get there, it will be hard knowledge for us to see increased access to firearms and see increased use in domestic violence homicide.
Patty, just a minute ago, very unfair of me to ask this, but can we end domestic abuse?
Yes, we can. And I don't think it's going to happen immediately. I don't know that it will happen in my lifetime. I'm 53. But I do believe, I have to believe, I have to have hope that when communities recognize and fully acknowledge and support victims of abuse and support holding offenders accountable for the violence that they use, for looking to the root causes of violence in families, we can start to turn the tide. But it's going to take a lot of community effort to do that. But I believe it can happen.
Thank you very much for being with us.
Thanks, Joy.
Patty Seeger, Executive Director of End Domestic Abuse Wisconsin. Thanks to Christy Taylor and to Elizabeth Deliquess for producing and directing this program. Thank you for listening. I hope you stay tuned. There's much more to come. Tomorrow at this time, we are talking about the Wisconsin Fermentation Festival and how you can learn to make your own fermented foods. That's tomorrow at this time.